Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai. Once someone goes to prison for the first time, the odds of them going back depend a lot on the education and job training they receive while behind bars. But in Illinois, only a small percentage of inmates have access to educational opportunities. A big reason is long wait lists. Illinois Department of Corrections policy says that once a class is full, inmates are placed on the waiting list in order of their release date, with those getting out soonest receiving priority. Lee Gaines recently reported on this and other roadblocks to education in Illinois prisons for Illinois Newsroom. She joins us now in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Tim Barnett. He's a professor of English at Northeastern Illinois University and also co-founded the University Without Walls, a degree completion program at Stateville Prison in Crest Hill, Illinois. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Lee, my first question is to you. How many prisoners are there in Illinois, and what percentage of them are able to get an education in prison?
So the prison population has actually been declining in Illinois. There are roughly about 40,000 people who are currently incarcerated in state facilities. And I don't have the percentage offhand, but it's very, very low if you're looking at attainment levels. So from the data that I could get that was verified by the Illinois Department of Corrections, about 160 or so people earned an associate's degree in fiscal year 2018, and about 723 people earned a GED. And so that's out of a total population of roughly 40,000.
Wow. And do you know the broad spectrum of what's available to them? I mean, you mentioned GED.
Yeah. So there's a number of programs that are available. So on the very basic level, you have adult basic education. And so that's for people who really need some help with primary and secondary classes. And then you also have the ability to study for your GED or your high school equivalency. And then as far as post-secondary programming goes, it's really kind of all over the map and really depends where you are in the prison system physically, like what facility are you located at. There are some facilities in the Chicago area, Stateville being one of them, that offers a number of college programs that are operated by private and public universities. Those are funded and really resource dependent on those universities. And so the people that are incarcerated up there have more access to programming than people who are incarcerated in some of the central and southern parts of the state where, you know, they might not have access to academic community college classes, or they might not have access to vocational classes, you know, depending on where they might be in the waiting list for such classes.
And speaking of such programs, Tim, you're a professor at Northeastern Illinois University. You also work with a program called University Without Walls at Stateville. Lee mentioned Stateville. Just give us a little background. Where is Stateville for those of us who don't know? And what's it like there?
Stateville's in Crest Hill, Illinois, by Joliet. It's a maximum security prison. Up to about 8 or 9 years ago, they had a GED program, and they had several religious kinds of programs and other sorts of programs, but no higher ed education. And the first two in there were DePaul University with their Inside Out program and the Prison and Neighborhood Arts Project, of which I'm a part as well, which is a coalition of faculty and activists and academics from around the city. And we ran non-credited classes, still continue the non-credited program. And about 5 years ago, maybe six, North Park University became involved, and they have a few programs, including a master's program. And about 3 years ago, Northwestern University got involved as well, and they are also running a few programs. And so there's a lot of good work happening at Stateville.
Wow. And would you say there's a good smattering of courses from every different discipline that are that's available?
Yes. Early on, not so much. The Prison Neighborhood Arts Project, we focus on arts and humanities, and we've extended to social sciences. But since Northwestern's come in, I've heard more about chemistry and hard sciences and math. So I do think it's probably not fully balanced, but there's definitely more of a balance now, and more students have access to higher ed.
And what makes you eligible? What do you have to do to be eligible to take class at Stateville?
It sort of depends. Early on, so the Prison and Neighborhood Arts Project runs on its own kind of system. But we also obviously have to adapt to the IDOC system and Stateville in particular, so that we accepted classes into college-level classes that were run not for credit. Pretty much any student who applied who was interested, they had to write a sort of letter indicating their interest and their background, but we're open to people who had GEDs or high school degrees and people who are not. We also have, through Northeastern Illinois University, the University Without Walls program, which graduated 6 students with a Bachelor of Arts degree last May. Those students, of course, had to have a high school diploma or a GED. And the other programs, which are offering credited classes, I believe these days they would, you know, require a GED, high school diploma. I think most of the programs require interviews. It's a fairly extensive process.
Lee, what have you found about what it takes to be eligible to take any kinds of educational classes in prison?
So there's a distinction, I think, between what Tim is describing mm-hmm. and what the Department of Corrections is offering. So, you know, as Tim mentioned, there are, you know, Northeastern, there's Northwestern, and here actually in Champaign-Urbana, we have the University of Illinois, which goes into Danville Correctional Center and offers accredited classes to a certain group of incarcerated men. They're a very select group. So that's separate from what DOC offers, which is they contract with community colleges across the state, primarily with one, Lakeland Community College, and they pay people to come in and teach certain vocational classes. But it's actually up to the community college to decide if they want to offer academic community college courses. The Department of Corrections isn't going to pay for that. And there's not a lot of educators. There's a little over 100 total in the system currently. And like I said, there's 40,000 people who are currently incarcerated. So the way it works for DOC with that type of programming is that usually they're filled to capacity because there's the demand, it exceeds the ability to offer these courses. And so you get placed on a waiting list, and you end up being placed on the waiting list based on your release date. So that means that people who are closer to their release date are going to be prioritized for that program, which, you know, makes a lot of sense from a logical point of view. However, what that actually ends up meaning in reality is that people with longer sentences can sit on these waiting lists for years and in the meantime have access to really nothing in the way of education.
So it sounds like it's either you have to be close to your release date or happen to be in a prison that has one of these wonderful programs from a private school that's come in.
Exactly. Or you have to be in a prison where a lot of the people in that facility have similarly long sentences. And then maybe at that point you can get access to a program. But if you're in a facility where, you know, let's say you're serving a 20-year sentence and the guy next to you is serving 10 months, that guy's going to be fast-tracked for the program.
And Tim, I'm just wondering, what are you teaching in prison?
So the University Without Walls program is a non-traditional degree completion program. And we have requirements based on, it's been around about 50 years, since about the 70s. And it takes into account students' experiences and the learning that they've obtained wherever they've obtained it. So that PNEP classes, for example, which have been taught by accredited professors, often internationally known professors, at the college level, but not for credit, are able to be applied towards a University Without Walls degree because it includes experiential and other kinds of learning as well. I'm an English professor primarily, and I've kind of helped oversee the University Without Walls program for the last 4 years or so. And so I tend to focus on literature, writing, and those kinds of things. And I just kind of, as I said, administer the program is probably mostly what I do.
Mm-hmm. Lee, you spoke.
Just quickly. In regards to what Lee had mentioned, there is, an important distinction that the community colleges headed by Lakeland, you know, have a connection with the state that the universities do not. And I wanted to add that when Governor Rauner was in office, that many of the community colleges, in fact, were unable to continue with their commitment to education in the prisons. And the state, you know, dropped funding, and part of the problem with funding up our way is that universities like Northeastern Illinois University, which caters to working class students of color, immigrants, and others, we are still suffering from the budget. And so one of the big issues with prison education is money. And there's a lot of talk about we want to support education, but many of the public universities are broke and IDOC is broke. And so there's really an important need to figure out the financial situation.
Lee, you mentioned the long wait list for prisoners, but you actually spoke with an inmate who transferred for better education options. Let's hear what he had to say.
I'm still on a waiting list for it. February or March, it'll make 3 years for me being on a waiting list and nothing.
Yeah, so that's Ralph Gray. And what he's talking about there is he's on a waiting list for an auto body class. So he was initially in Western Illinois prison, and he was able to take some academic community college classes up there through Lakeland. And he said he was about 16 credits shy of receiving his associate's degree. And this is a guy who now is 25. He was incarcerated when he was 18 years old. He's 7 years through a 20-year sentence. And so he said his quality of life at Western really wasn't great. He was only allowed to leave his cell for about an hour and a half every day, despite the fact that he, you know, was getting an education. But they didn't have this vocational class that he wanted to take. He really wanted to take an auto body class. He felt like that might make him a more attractive employee once he's released. And so he requested a transfer to Graham Correctional Center, which was a lower security prison, and he received it. But what he didn't realize is he wasn't aware of this policy that prioritizes people who are closer to their out dates. So when he got there and wanted to take this class, he was basically told, you know, good luck. You're going to be at the very bottom of this wait list for a very long time. And as he says in that clip, you know, it's been 3 years so far.
Mm. And he has no idea when he'll be able to take
it. He has no idea. And, you know, there's no, in the meantime, he can't complete his associate's degree. And so what he said to me is, you know, his last resort really in this situation, I think what a lot of people who are motivated like him, because he's really motivated to get an education, is he's going to have to pay for correspondence courses. Mm. And when I say he, that means his family. And right. He's very lucky that he has a family, I think, that's willing to do that.
Right. And a lot just don't. Do you know how the availability of education, or in this case, the lack thereof, affects recidivism? Is it possible to tease those things out?
Yeah, there's actually been some research done on that, and research is continuing on that. The RAND Corporation, which is this nonpartisan think tank, did a study about that a number of years ago. And what they found was that for every dollar that a correctional system or a state correctional system spends on education inside its prison, they save $5 on recidivism costs. They believe there's a very strong connection between, you know, the likelihood that someone will return to prison is very much decreased if they have access to an education while they are incarcerated. So I think, you know, people that get an associate's degree, the chance that they'll recidivate decreases. And then as you go up the scale to bachelor's and even a graduate degree, I mean, it gets even, you know, slimmer and slimmer after that. So there is, according to the research so far, a pretty significant connection.
Huh. And now I know that other states do this a lot better, especially places like California. They've got San Quentin that has a myriad of programs. And I'm just wondering why Illinois cannot get this done a little bit better.
So California is an interesting case. I would say they do it the best. And that's because of, you know, legislation that they had passed in 2014. San Quentin at that time, I think, might have been the only prison that had this type of programming in it. And what they ended up doing through this legislation was cutting down some red tape, some bureaucracy. So essentially, the law allows community colleges to come into the prisons, teach face-to-face classes, and then they can be reimbursed from the state for teaching those classes. And so a lot of these community colleges actually had declining enrollment. So this was kind of an incentive for them to go into the prisons, teach these students, and also receive funding for doing so from the state. And so California went from, you know, having some college programming in only 2 of its 35 facilities to now having college programming in 34 of 35 facilities. And there's an extraordinary demand. And what I was told by the someone who works over in that prison system, Brant Choate, he's the director of their programming services. He told me, you know, this is really, it's not just that they're getting an education and that's going to make them less likely to recidivate. It's also changing the culture of the prison itself. It's leading to less destructive behaviors. It's making the jobs of the staff at the prison easier. It's having these other kind of less quantifiable benefits in terms of what it is like to be inside that prison facility.
Well, speaking of money, and as you mentioned, Ralph may have to pay for his own, and
yes,
he's willing to. We have another clip from Ralph, and he's talking about that.
I think it's most important for me to continue to strive, irregardless of whether IDOC is offering it to me or I have to pay out of my own pocket to make sure that I obtain the education that's necessary.
Yeah, that's going to be a real stretch for some inmates. Tim, how heavy a lift is this for the people and the advocates who want to see the system changed?
It's pretty heavy. It's nice to see that there seems to be a shift in public opinion and that prison reform and hopefully radical change is actually or seems to be, on the minds of people in different ways than it was 10 years ago. And it's interesting as well that this is one of the few bipartisan issues. And I think there are definitely distinctions and certainly not everyone has the same idea of what it means to reform prisons or to change them dramatically. But I think that there is change. The private universities, the state universities that are working on their own, we've been raising money through grants. We've been raising money through private foundations. We've had fundraisers. We've had a lot of volunteer activity. So the dollars sort of spent that way have been fairly great over the last 8, 9, 10 years. So it's, there's definitely a lot to be changed, and a lot of it has to do with public attitude. But the heartening part is I think that is starting to change.
Lee, last question. Has the idea of rehabilitation kind of died along with the budget for inmate education?
I don't think so, because I actually...
I mean, for the state funded.
So here's the thing. I think Tim is right. I think that we're starting to see conditions inside prisons being talked about in a way that it wasn't talked about 10 years ago. There is this focus on mass incarceration, and he's right. It is a bipartisan issue in that I think both Democrats and Republicans agree that the way that we do prisons in this country just isn't working for anyone. And you can come to that argument from a humanitarian perspective, but you can also come to that argument from
economic,
a fiscal perspective.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So what it really is going to take, it's going to take investment, I think, though, on the part of the state. And the people that control the powers of the purse are our state officials, our elected officials. So it's going to really be up to them whether or not they want to follow in a state like California's lead.
Lee Gaines is the education reporter at Illinois Newsroom and WILL. Tim Barnett is a professor of English at Northeastern Illinois University. Thank you guys both for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me.